Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 17th of March, 2021. Well, hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts for this week. So we begin with our regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legree. Her contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And those of you with computers or tablets, you can use not the memory stick, not only in the box, but you can access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through the website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News in the header bar, locate the recording that you want to hear and click Download. The recording is listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. Our readers today, apart from myself, are my wife, Roz.
Hello.
So let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. We've got sort of four headlines to read. There's the sharp rise in cost to swim, three COVID lockdowns see huge falls in crime, critics set out at Silver Hill delays, and uni to unveil statue of Greta Thunberg. So, Roz, can we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Certainly can, and it's the disappointing sharp rise in cost to swim. Users of the new sports centre in Winchester are set to be hit by sharply increased charges. The cost of a swimming session at the new leisure centre has been labelled as totally wrong. A report to City Council Cabinet shows that users of the new centre in Bar End will have to pay up to 40% more than at River Park Leisure Centre. Juniors and disabled people will now pay £3, a 33% and a 40% increase, respectively. Seniors will no longer swim for free. The 40 million centre is due to open in May. The council expects contractors Wilmot Dixon to hand over the building in the first week of May, with an opening to the public by the end of May. It will boast a 50-metre swimming pool, multi-use sport hall, a 200-station gym, studios, fun climbing, squash courts and a hydrotherapy suite. Councillor Hugh Lumby told Cabinet, "I'm sorry, but increasing the price of sessions for juniors and disabled peoples is really disappointing. It's staggering, totally wrong. The new price of an adult gym session will cost £9.50, 80 pence more than before. A report shows that both disabled and young people will pay £5.50 for a gym session. The previous price at River Park is not listed. The price to hire a squash court will remain the same, £8.60 for an £8.60 for an adult and £6.40 for a junior. But a badminton court will now cost £12.50, up by £1.30. Chas Bradfield, strategic director, told the meeting, "The gym will be better value. The facilities are so much better, and concessions will still be available. The prices seen here in this report are from the council, but prices are largely down to everyone active." The Chronicle approached everyone active for comment. The Cabinet last Wednesday also heard that on-street parking fees are now set to rise from April. Those purchasing their first permit on street parking in the controlled areas will pay £40, up from £30. Building control fees will rise by 10% on the same date. Conservative councillor Stephen Godfrey criticised the Lib Dem administration for not sharing which fee would be rising sooner. He said most councillors here did not understand what fees were to be included in the paper until it was published ahead of this meeting. Cabinet should reconsider and introduce a discount scheme for those on lower incomes.
Three COVID lockdowns see huge falls in crime. So crime in Winchester has plummeted since the COVID lockdown last March, according to new figures. Winchester City Council said that the index of crimes, including burglary, robbery and assault, has dropped by 27.8%. Police Commander Chief Inspector John Thurton said that the reason was more than just the three lockdowns, but also partnership work with other agencies and focusing on priorities. He said, there's been an almost 30% reduction in overall crime. It's easy to give credit to COVID, but we have been working hard with partner agencies, done a lot of work to support more vulnerable people and tackle persistent offenders. Violence was down by 12.8%, sexual offences by 13.1%, robbery 54.8%, theft 52%, criminal damage 14%. Drugs offences were up, with police taking a proactive, intelligence-led approach. However, domestic violence rose by 9%, from 940 cases in 2019 to 1,022 in 2020. Reports of begging plummeted from 472 in 2019 to 81 last year. Chief Inspector Thurton highlighted recent County Lines investigation, which has seen the arrest and charging of several London men on drugs offences. He said the aim was to dismantle the networks of dealing. Sometimes it is just a matter of time before someone else uses a different SIM card and uses the same network and carries on. We've closed down these lines and we are trying to cut the snake's head off rather than just causing minor disruption. A new scheme called Hotel Watch, working with the reception desk to increase awareness of suspicious people. We were called to a hotel in Winchester where two young lads who had been missing from Croydon for a number of months and they were found with lots of drugs. They were recognised as vulnerable and were handed over to the St Giles Trust. The lockdown has seen an increase in some antisocial behaviour with issues at Compton Lock near Twyford. Things got so bad that Twyford Parish Council hired a private security firm to control the area at busy times last summer. Chief Inspector Thurton told the City Council Scrutiny Committee, with COVID restrictions, Winchester has been quite compliant in comparison with other areas. Councillor Caroline Brooke, Conservative for Denmead Ward, asked about dog thefts. Chief Inspector Thurton said it was not something we are seeing in Hampshire. It's a crime close to everyone's heart, but they are really rare in Hampshire. Social media has gone into a spin and generated a lot of concern and a lot of interest. However, on Monday, the police tweeted about an attempted theft in Winnell, warning owners to be beware. Fly tipping is on the up, with 1,531 cases in 2020, up from 1,236 in 2019, a jump of 24%. On domestic violence, Councillor Jackie Porter, portfolio holder for Wellbeing, said there were 8.7% more referrals for domestic abuse in 2020 than in 2019. And while self-referrals from April to December were 50% of 2019 figures, police referrals increased by 86%, and we saw a 100% increase in reported cases from children's services. Tragically, over 1,022 cases of domestic abuse were reported in our district in 2020. The City Council plays their part alongside other professionals to ensure victims are safe and housed.
So this next item I have is entitled Uni to Unveil Statue of Greta Thunberg. This is the first look at a statue set to be unveiled at Winchester University later this month. Christine Charlesworth is the artist behind this sculpture of Greta, who was propelled into the international media spotlight when she began the school climate strikes in 2018. After a year of work, it was finally ready to be unveiled at the university's West Down campus on Romsey Road on March the 30th. Christine of Milford, Surrey, believes this is the first full-size sculpture of the art activist. She told the Chronicle, "I was commissioned by Winchester University, who selected a few artists to give presentations of their ideas for a sculpture of Greta in March 2020. Originally, the interview committee were talking about her sitting on the ground, wearing her yellow coat. But I felt strongly about portraying her, telling more about the person she is. I was awarded the commission a number of weeks later due to all the problems with the first lockdown. The university wanted a sculpture of Greta because it is a very green university and they felt that Greta will be an inspiration to all students. I first made a maquette, quarter size of the figure, of my idea, which had to be approved by the committee online. I completed the sculpture by the end of the year and the Vice-Chancellor, Joy Carter, was able to visit between lockdowns to approve the finished sculpture. It is now almost finished, being cast in bronze. Christine, who has also completed two larger portrait sculptures of women, Dame Ethel Smythe, composer for Woking Town Centre, and Emily Wilding Davison, suffragette for Epsom Town Centre. Dame Ethel will be put on site in May and Emily to be unveiled on June the 6th. I'm very proud to have created three important female bronze statues for prominent places in the country and I hope that I will be commissioned to create a few more in the future, added Christine. The artist trained at Wolverhampton College of Art between 1965 and 1967 and moved to Surrey in 1995 and concentrated on her career as sculptor. Since 2000, she has completed 46 private and 15 public commissions. News of the statue of Miss Dernburg comes the week after the Chronicle revealed that University Vice-Chancellor Joy Carter had written in support of the controversial plans for a solar farm at Godsfield near Old Alsford. Professor Carter wrote, said, "The world needs initiatives like this urgently. All life and the planet are threatened. Please go ahead." The University Chancellor, Alan Titchmarsh, has written to strongly oppose the same plans.
Thank you, Ros. And the last headline story is headed, "Critics hit out at Silver Hill delays." The property advisers behind the latest Silver Hill scheme have already gobbled up more than £500,000. Winchester City Council is making steady progress on its proposals with JLL as its strategic placemaking consultant. But a recent cabinet meeting heard that £503,428 has already been paid to the company. Conservative Councillor Hugh Lumbie said, We are taking too long to consult over this. JLL has alone gobbled up a huge amount so far. That's equivalent to 11.8 planning job posts for the whole year. And what have we had in return? Fancy slides and delays. Work carried out using this money includes, but is not exclusive to, a roadmap review, a competitive positioning study, testing proposals for the site, assessing delivery models, advice and planning with regard to bus provision, and ongoing work on viability, financial analysis, planning, and soft market testing to support the development proposals. The meeting heard that officers are now looking for the best way to progress the scheme, which is also known as the Central Winchester Regeneration, or briefly, it was called Saxongate. They need to decide whether the City Council will operate as the master developer or pursue a contractual joint venture. Former City Councillor Kim Gottlieb, himself a property developer, spoke during the public participation. Alongside other members of the public, he and a couple of councillors, including Conservative leader Councillor Caroline Horrell, are concerned about the proposals for King's Walk, which will involve retaining the 1970s office block. He said, "I don't want to criticise the idea of a creative quarter, but King's Walk is the wrong place to put it. The reason is that King's Walk is a central and large part of the regeneration area, nearly 2 acres in size, and it is part of that that most needs the most regeneration. Retaining something that's so big and so ugly will crucially undermine the regeneration of the whole area. No amount of money will make it attractive or sustainable, and to spend millions on it at a time when council staff are being made redundant and budgets are being cut is hard to understand." It's also hard to understand why nowhere in the papers is any thought given to the idea of just selling King's Walk. Mr. Gottlieb added that the idea of retaining King's Walk because it's environmentally friendly doesn't hold water. Over a 10 to 50 year period, a brand new building with a CHP system and other modern technologies would be far more thermally efficient and produce far less carbon than the existing building would, he added. You could more easily put a much better creative quarter in a new development and, in the meantime, follow the previous plan to build a box park within the bus station. It was half the price, or better still, try to establish a creative quarter in the high street. Mr. Gottlieb's idea are illustrated by the attached CGI created by Adam Architecture. Emma Black from Winchester Sports, Arts and Leisure Trust also spoke during the participation. She said, "I have serious concerns over the potential sale of the leasehold and privatisation of the Central Winchester Regeneration Area. Most residents would be horrified to see the heart of the city sold off and leased to a developer. We hope the regeneration can deliver some of the improvements to leisure spaces that it mentioned during consultation." Councillor Leslie Clairney responded, "We are just adding the finishing touches to 7 new homes in Wick. We have increased the permeability between Hairstock and Wick with the hope that more people will be able to walk and cycle between the two. The same goes at Silver Hill. We aren't just looking to perfect the buildings, but the spaces between them too." Following concerns, Lib Dem Councillor Martin Tobb insisted that the current plans for city buses are only temporary. He said, "We are aware that our final thoughts will need to be in keeping with the movement strategy. These are not the final plans for the city buses that you can see. These are interim plans to free up the bus station for redevelopment, whilst meeting bus users' needs in the short and medium term." He added that the stops at the bus station are not the most used, and those in Silver Hill seeing more footfall. Right, well, those are the headline stories for this week. And so we go on to the death notices.
I'm reading the list, and the first is Bailey, Irene Alice Bailey, passed away peacefully at home on the 10th of March 2021, aged 97 years.
Gate, Susan Jane Gate, sadly passed away on the 18th of February, aged 66 years.
Mole, Graham Mole, journalist, ex-TV producer and media lecturer. He passed away at home in Bishopstoke on the 27th of February with his loved ones by his side.
Morris, David Frank Sharwood Morris, passed away peacefully at home on Thursday the 11th of March, aged 85.
Milne, Gillian Rosemary Milne, nay more, passed away peacefully on the 2nd of March 2021 at the age of 83.
Stevens, Irene Agnes Stevens, formerly of Kingsworthy, latterly of Fair Oak, Eastleigh. She passed away peacefully at home on the 23rd of February 2020, aged 99.
Warn, Eric Francis Warn, passed away peacefully at Southampton General Hospital on the 4th of March 2021.
Webb, Edna Webb, peacefully at home on the 6th of March 2021. And now we have Christian comment read by Roz, please.
Yes, thank you. And this week's edition is called The Destructive Spirit Among Us, and it was written by Liz Tatham. The heavenly beings came to present themselves to the Lord, and Satan came too. The Lord asked Satan where he had come from. Well, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it, replied Satan. Job 1:6-7. I think this is one of the most vivid and telling passages in the Bible. We can see a troublemaker, cunning, determined, prowling about looking for a fight. God gives Satan permission to test Job, and the story of Job's torments are well known, until God calls Satan off and restores to Job children, cattle, land, and all that matters to him. In his lengthy discussion with his free friends under a tree, Job laments and regrets, but does not condemn God. Division, separation. That is what Satan does. It is what he likes. This destructive spirit of division is amongst us now. Every day in the news, a family divided, police and protesters doing battle, political division, suppression, and subsequent revolt. And then there are stories we hear so often that we have become used to. There are war-torn countries with the resulting refugees who become abused and trafficked. And then, of course, there is division among religions, and also among Christians. Satan must rejoice at the pain and hurt and condemnation we rain down on those we disagree with. Divide and separate, a well-known ploy in conquering others. So what are we to do about it? We, the small people in the everyday world. The answer is in Job and in the Gospels. Satan is a servant of God. Hate and division do not have the final word. God is ruler and the ultimate bringer of goodness and love. All there is subservient to God in the end. In his farewell to his disciples in the Gospel of John 17:21, Jesus says, "I pray they will all be one." Christians who read this passage are reminded that we believe he was talking about us, members of his church to come, his body. So we could start by showing understanding and tolerance to each other in our different denominations. We know about the ultimate victory of God through Jesus' resurrection, but perhaps he meant it for all of us. We hoped he would all be one. So we can all, whatever we believe, adopt an attitude of forgiveness, understanding, giving way and tolerance. There is always division. It is human nature to want our own way and to believe we know best. Walking around to the other side of the table and seeing things from the other people's point of view, or just holding our peace when it doesn't really matter what is being argued about. A wise priest said to me the other day, "When you see the smoke rising, back off." He meant to desist when argument, criticism, and their hurtful results are looming. Let us be like Job, and whilst we may lament, remain peaceful and God-loving. Let us hear the words of Jesus and try and be one. And that was written by Liz Tatham.
Thank you, Roz. We go on to letters to the editor, a real mixed bag of letters this week. And we start with a letter from John Beveridge of Compton Road, Winchester, and it's headed Hyde Street. "Sir, many in Winchester are impatient to see the transformation of the city into a low traffic area as proposed in the 2019 movement strategy. But while we wait for a comprehensive plan, we have the chance to have some limited but important interventions to provide improvements for cyclists and pedestrians and restrictions on vehicles as proposed in Hampshire County Council's current consultation. The opposition to the closure of Hyde Street reminds me of the controversies over the change in the direction of traffic along Parchment Street about 15 years ago, which I was involved with when a city councillor. It achieved a major reduction in the number of cars which were using it as a shortcut out of Winchester. Hyde Street has similarities to Parchment Street, with a mixture of residential and other uses, both in conservation areas. Research from other places is positive. Closing roads to traffic often leads to an overall reduction in traffic. Emergency services are not delayed, and the benefits flow to communities, businesses and residents. Since Hyde Street was closed, the monitoring of traffic in Worthy Road has some supportive findings. Traffic leaving Winchester, both goods, vehicles and cars, beyond the junction with Hyde Street, has reduced more than the traffic in Winchester as a whole, 75% instead of 85% in March 2020 levels. While traffic on Worthy Lane between Andover Road and Hyde Street has increased since March 2020, it is less concentrated, with less traffic at peak times between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. The number of heavy goods vehicles remains similar to March 2020. The Hyde Street closure has made no difference to journey times on Andover Road or Worthy Road, Worthy Lane. Well, given that we know from experience from other places the monitoring so far by Hampshire County Council, it seems to me well worth agreeing to an 18-month trial to monitor the effects before a final decision is made. And that letter is from John Beveridge, Compton Road, Winchester.
Thank you. The letter I have here is entitled Shoal Business. And it's from Phil Yates. Sir, I was pleased to read that the former 1871 cafe is now to be renamed Shoal, Chronicle, March the 4th. Very appropriate for a fish and chip restaurant. The previous title never did latch on. It was so named because 1871 was the year when the builder Joseph Bull and Son of Southampton started to erect the premises. This will take the place of the Blue Dolphin on the High Street, which is now occupied by Valerie's Restaurant, and that is from Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
The next letter is from James Anderson, headed Cycle Path. Sir, our parish magazine this month includes Jackie's County Corner, associating herself with a cycle path from Worthy down to Andover Road. There is another and more important cycle path desperate for her attention from Kingsworthy to the heart of Winchester. It's been raised before in the Chronicle. An underpass to the A34 costing hundreds of thousands of pounds was provided at Church Green Close. It's an access to weeds and mud for a distance of 1 kilometre to Abbots Barton, where it becomes a decent cycle path again, all the way to the heart of Winchester. In the past, Councillor Porter has been all excuses for the lack of action around this short section of this important access. When is it going to be sorted? That's from James Anderson, Right Close, South Wanston.
Get on with it. This is from Terry Gould. Sir, so many meetings, so little progress. Will this always be the story of regenerating Winchester? Nibbling away at the edges of the site may be necessary, but avoids the real problem. No master plan, no strategy. Hardly even a mention of the southern edge of the site, the Broadway. Winchester's potentially best public space. Yes, demolish the old Friars Gate surgery building, and yes, leave it open for the time being. Take the opportunity, though, to clean up and restore the Lower Brook, linking it to the stream north of Friars Gate, and thus to Winnell Moors. to create another open highway. Yes, in the open space created, plant trees, shrubs, wildflowers to start the greening of the area. Yes, employ JDP, who did the excellent work earlier for the site, and who actually did a master plan. And then once it is clear to where to do, once it is clear what to do, get on and find good developers to start the work. Central Winchester Reservation Regeneration Area is only a relatively small part of Winchester Town and, in my opinion, cannot be realistically planned without a comprehensive design plan for this entire town. Please get on and also find a good master planning firm like JTP to do a strategic plan that takes account of other possibly competing areas for development. Station Approach, Sir John Moore Barracks, the central car parks to be developed for housing and for whatever is known at the time of movement study. Please, please get on and really do something. Local elections are looming. And that's from Terry Gould of Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Next letter is written by Patricia Dowdle. It's headed Smart Motorways. Sir, in March 2020, following a Department of Transport evidence stock take of the safety of smart motorways, Grant Shapps pledged that in future all refuges on smart motorways would be a maximum of 1 mile apart. However, I have received a letter from Highways England which states that in spite of this, refuges on the M3, junction 9 to 14, will be 1.39 miles apart on average. This obviously means that some distances will be even greater. This applies to the Winchester oblique Eastleigh section, even though construction has not been started yet. This discrepancy seems to have arisen because it is part of an existing plan. This means that the refuges would be spaced according to old rules, which are no longer considered to be safe. I would like to know why the plan cannot be changed before work actually commences on this part of the motorway. I suspect that bureaucratic expediency and financial considerations have prevailed over the safety of motorway users. That was written by Patricia Dowdle, Holderway Close, Kingsworthy.
The next letter I have is headed Need for Cleanup. So, Winchester's hospitality and retail businesses must all be getting ready for the imminent easing of lockdown. We know how tough recent months have been for them, but could our city council be doing more to help? What a dreadful impression many of our visitors get as they drive through litter-strewn approach roads to our fine city. This is really not the way to entice and enchant the visitors our businesses so need. We hope, therefore, that your readers will join us in asking the City Council to do better and to clean up our roads. It will be money well spent, as if hospitality and retail thrive, then so will the city as a whole. And that's from Tracy and Colin Grant Wilson of Peninsula Square, Winchester.
Jenny Stables writes the next letter, headed Drive Less, Sir. We all know that CO2 emissions have to be brought down as soon as possible. We'd all like less traffic congestion in town and cleaner air to breathe. But when the city and county councillors reorganises traffic flow to favour cyclists or pedestrians, there are complaints from all sides. What I'm wondering is why we car owners don't just assume our responsibilities and drive less, not driving children to school or making unnecessary journeys, instead of expecting someone else to come up with some magical scheme that would somehow make everything right. Why do we need our elected representatives to chivvy and persuade us? I suppose that to change the habits of a lifetime, some incentive is required, but surely the prospect of avoiding the breakdown of our global human habitat should be incentive enough. Is there any greater prize? So that letter was from Jenny Stables, Gordon Avenue, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Garden waste. This is from Peter Grant. Sir, I would like to add my objections to those of your correspondence regarding the change in the cost and arrangements for the City Council's collection of domestic garden waste. For using one of the larger brown wheelie bins, there is now an annual charge of £59, all for taking not much more than about a bag and a half of the former green fabric, brackets no charge, bags. Brackets Richard Vellacott's letter last week summarised the pertinent point excellently. Why has this change taken place? Is it because of the change in control of the council from Conservative to Liberal Democrat? Or is it BIFA insisting on changing to what they regard as a more efficient system, i.e. it's for BIFA's convenience? Or is it simply to raise more money? Either way, it will undoubtedly lead to more fly tipping and greater congestion at the tip, particularly during the summer months. A full explanation from the City Council of their motivation for the change would be most helpful. And that's from Peter Grant of Simmons Street, Winchester.
Kim Gottlieb writes, Sir, everyone wants to see Silver Hill regenerated, but the City Council's current plans will make a mess of it again and completely miss a wonderful opportunity the site presents. The problem is the plan to retain King's Walk so as to make it, the council says, a creative quarter for creative industries. However worthy that aspiration might be, King's Walk is a big, tall and ugly, very ugly. It's 2 acres, occupies the centre of the whole area, particularly when you include the Brooks Centre, the regeneration of which seems to have been forgotten. King's Walk is part of the area that most needs regeneration, and no amount of tarting up would change the fact that its retention will undermine and delay the whole area's regeneration. It's actually where the regeneration should begin, as it's the easiest part of the regeneration area that could be most quickly be brought forward for development. There will be little archaeology beneath the site because it's already been dug out. There are no obstacles to vacant possession and no especially difficult transport or waterway issues to worry about. The work could have started 3 years ago, soon after the supplementary planning document was adopted, if the master plans produced by JTP had been brought forward. The council says that its plan accords with the supplementary planning document, but nowhere in that official planning document in which so many people place their confidence does it contemplate retaining King's Walk. Nor does it advise the single developer route, nor privatising the open spaces that are meant to form part of the public domain, as is now being mooted. If the council wants to establish a creative quarter, it first needs to check the business plan and be certain that it actually warrants a £5 million subsidy at a time when every other budget is being cut. It then needs to be thoughtful about where to put it. Why not within the High Street or even the empty loss-making halls of the Guildhall? Just please, please don't mess up and delay the regeneration of Silver Hill for another 20 years. That was written by Kim A. Gottlieb of East Stratton.
Many thanks from R. Hamilton. May I, through your letter page, please express my sincere thanks to the person or persons who found a bunch of keys at the Farley Mount viewpoint on Saturday, March the 6th. And they placed them there at the top of the trig point where I found them. Many thanks. And that's R. Hamilton, St. James Road, West End, Southampton. Said old values still exist.
This letter is written by J.N. Barrett. Need for hospital. Sir, it is obvious that the Hampshire Health Authority is still determined to waste the funding the NHS receives to build a new hospital near Basingstoke that is not required and will be detrimental to the public's well-being. The money would be better spent on improving local hospitals so as not to centralise other treatments from the local hospitals. This will mean that quite a few patients will not be able to afford the taxi fares or rely on buses that do not start early. If you have transport, fine, but there are quite a few people who have no transport, and before the authorities come out with the always ridiculous remark, ask a neighbour, what planet are you lot on? In most public dwelling areas, there are different age groups, and they like to keep to themselves, to their own. They acknowledge you are in the area, but that's as far as it goes. They do not want to get involved in your problems. So much so that when remarking you have an appointment and can't get there, they are and do remark, oh, we're out that day, but the vehicle does not move. So stop being bureaucratically stupid and put the money to better use for the good of patients more locally. That is written by J.N. Barrett, Nicholas Place, Aldersford.
Thanks again. Another very positive letter here. Sir, once again I would like to thank the Royal Winchester Golf Club for opening up their magnificent course for walkers to enjoy during the winter lockdown. And that's from David Leeson of Hampton Lane, Tegdown, Winchester. Another happy man.
Katrina Rogers writes, down to us. Sir, last week you published an article by Tom Bromley, Missing a Big Opportunity, which described his successful attempts at losing weight. But the gist of the letter was a criticism of the government and its obesity drive. He feels it's a shame the government won't spend more on helping people lose weight. We need to remember how much public money has been sunk into fighting this pandemic and saving lives, including the incredible success of the vaccine rollout. This is what the government and public health drives are here for. When it comes to obesity, the power lies in the individual, as demonstrated by Tom himself. I work as a healthcare professional and I'm very tired of people asking why the government aren't doing more, i.e. spending more, on something entirely under our own control. Prime examples being exercising more and losing weight. The government can't make me lose weight, only I can. I am the captain of my ship and the master of my destiny. I am glad this government leave the common sense and self-discipline to us. We are not children. Tom could start up a support group himself for those wanting to lose weight as a volunteer without precious government funds and share his journey and success in helping others to do the same. The government cannot get us to lose weight. It is down to us. And that's written by Katrina Rogers, Chil Bolton Avenue, Winchester. And the last letter is written by Peter Rees, member of Winchester Constituency Labour Party. It is headed The Future of Debenhams. Sir, the future of the Debenham site has elicited many suggestions. Winchester Labour Party is now putting forward an idea that is already gathering significant support from recent canvassing. The whole of the ground floor and possibly extending upwards should become Winchester's indoor covered market. It's an ideal location with pedestrian access from the high street and especially close to the bus station. The Market Lane goods entrance will provide easy stall holder access with accessible traders parking in Colebrook Street car park. Attracting independent local traders, providing variety and competition, it will support the local economy with farm and small holding produce. Indoor and warmer stall trading conditions could be available all year round, conserving fuel and providing a better carbon footprint. By contributing significantly to stimulating the local economy, it will create a pleasant community-focused market shopping centre destination. As well as garden produce, all types of other commodities, antiques, books, records, clothes, gifts, flowers and different food offers should be accommodated. Indoor markets are no competitive threat to established shops. Indeed, all thrive through coexistence and different offers. Evidence that shows that where covered markets exist, efficiently and effectively managed, there is always an increase in associated local footfall. Highly successful covered markets such as Leeds, Darlington, Oxford, Bristol, Leicester, Norwich, Camden Lock and Brixton in London all increased local shop trade. Markets create the feel-good buzz of the street scene. They produce very good value for money, as well as celebrating culture, identity, diversity and inclusivity. I say that's written by Peter Rees, who's a member of Winchester Constituency Labour Party of Monarch Way, Winchester. OK, that finishes with our letters and our editorial comment from Ros, please.
Yes, the editor has headed his piece, Coronavirus, the first anniversary. COVID-19. There were guffaws when some people said the first lockdown could last months. And here we are, on the cusp of the anniversary of the first lockdown on March the 23rd. The first death in the Winchester area was reported the day before. And we are not out of it yet, but learning to live with it as human nature is able to do. It is a time to stop and reflect and to think what we've gone through, the strangest events of most of our lives, to think about the friends and family who have been affected and about the 183 people in the Winchester district who have lost their lives. But we can, most of us, be proud of how we have responded, proud that we did it with a shrug, a groan, and perhaps a joke. Was it? Is it the same in other countries? It would be interesting to see the future findings of comparative studies. But this country certainly had enough of the fools who broke the rules, the other fools who sneered at the majority and called them, and still call them, sheeple. The All Right Jack Brigade, who are beneath contempt.
Thank you, Ros. Now we move on now to opinion piece written this week by Ron Allison, and it's called Duke's First Class Innings. One of the many, very many welcome consequences of working for Her Majesty the Queen is that as a member of the royal household, I was also responsible to His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh. Not the Prince Philip needed any help in getting a hearing for his interests and the causes he supported. From the earliest days of his marriage to the Queen, he revealed a willingness to become completely involved in such enterprises as his Young People's Award scheme. It was not enough for him to be merely the figurehead. He wanted to know all that was going on, often being an instigator of fresh enterprises and ever ready with suggestions on the lines of, well, why not do it this way? The stability of the monarchy brings life in the United Kingdom, and indeed to many other Commonwealth countries, still retaining the Queen as its head of state, is so often envied in other parts of the world. It is in no way to belittle the Queen herself to say that it is an enormous bonus when the head of state's partner is someone as distinguished in his own right as Prince Philip. Had his life taken a different course, I'm sure he would have risen to the top as a chief executive or a hands-on managing director. And as such, he would have been an inspiration to those working with him. Indeed, that is what exactly he has done as he moves towards his 100th birthday on June the 10th. So, happy birthday, sir. As a keen cricketer, Prince Philip will appreciate the applause all round the world as he bats on towards his ton. We can all join in. More applause for the majority of us who have been observing the lockdown regulations these past months. It has come easily for some to accept the enforced restrictions, but surely we can see for ourselves the need for some restraints. In any case, a new way of life has been developed without too much apparent difficulty. For the greater good seems a responsible slogan, and one that has been unofficially adopted. It has certainly been a good time for those who follow league football and rely on television to provide them with the coverage. According to my wife, there now seems to be match coverage to view for most evenings of the week. Not strictly true, but she has a point, and I, for one, no longer feel the need to watch every minute of every available game. Mind you, I still have time to watch a generous provision of other sports, including rugby union. The other version of rugby, the league, also gets a look in, but there is a bit of north-south viewing divide here. League remains something of a taste still to be acquired in our part of the world. All in all, lovers of most games are well served by our television companies. We have come a long way since Dennis Compton, once he had retired, not out, was among the first of our top-class ex-players who have become extremely proficient commentators. Inevitably, he was as good on the screen as he was at the wicket, which means it was well worthwhile going a long way to share his company. Another legendary commentator who sadly died this week was Murray Walker, the voice of Formula One. As a contemporary of the Duke of Edinburgh, he too was a steadfast, constant presence in our lives. Well, after that, we move on to Belgarum. A couple of pieces here. First one read by Roz, please.
Yes, I've got one entitled The First Egg of the Year at Cathedral. That's exciting. The Peregrines of Winchester Cathedral have laid the first egg of the year. Winnie laid her first egg last Wednesday, a week earlier than usual, and the others are set to follow at around two-day intervals. Keith Betton, chairman and county recorder of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said he expected around four eggs. Last year, Winnie laid five, which is very unusual. He said they expected the eggs to start hatching at around April 20th. As reported, the 2019 male chick made his way to Farnham in Surrey and has not found a mate yet. The peregrines returned to Winchester several years ago, part of their revival nationally. Initially, they were at the police headquarters on Romsey Road, a tall building which replicated their natural habitat of cliffs. When the police headquarters was demolished, they moved down the road to the cathedral. The birds have been controlling the number of pigeons in the city centre. There is currently little or no evidence that the peregrines are attacking garden birds. That's good news. We did have a peregrine in our garden, and we just watched it sit there and survey the scenery, decided there was nothing to be done here, and pushed off rather haughtily, I thought. But it's lovely to have them back.
And our cats looked at it with some trepidation, I can tell you.
They scarpered.
Well, the second piece from Belgarum is headed New Uses for the Unused BT Boxes. There are 18 redundant phone boxes available to be put to a new use in the Winchester area. BT's Adopt a Kiosk scheme is making more than 370 red phone boxes across the South East, boxes available for local communities to adopt for £1. BT urges local communities to take advantage of a scheme to help transform them for the 21st century. There are 18 available in Winchester. The locations are at the moment unavailable. In the Test Valley, there are 9, New Forest, 5, Eastleigh, 4, East Hampshire, 9. In the past, the City Council has opposed the decommissioning, but the near universal use of mobile phones and improved network coverage means that some boxes are rarely, if ever, used. Redundant phone boxes have been transformed into everything from defibrillator units and mini history museums to art galleries and book exchanges. BT will also consider adoption requests to go to defibrillators in modern glass phone boxes, potentially life-saving conversion. Don Pollock, BT Enterprise Unit Director for the South of England, said, "With most people now using mobile phones, it has led to a huge drop in the number of calls made from payphones. At the same time, mobile coverage has improved significantly in recent years due to investment in masts, particularly in rural areas. We are currently rationalising our payphone estate to make it fit for the future, and the Adopt a Kiosk scheme makes it possible for local communities in the South East to retain their local phone box with a refreshed purpose for the community." The phone box in Hurstbourne Tarrant near Andover has already been converted into a mini library and hit the headlines last week after the parish councillor asked the villagers to stop placing risque fiction in it. Right, well, we now move on to items of general news. The first from Roz, please.
Yes, I have a piece called Rachel's New CD Gets High Praise from BBC Host. This is a lovely, positive story. It's a pleasure to read. A piece from Rachel Carver's new album, Psalm for Harp, was selected by Radio 3's Sarah Walker for a recent Sunday morning show. The host described her as a young British virtuoso. Rachel, 24, who was brought up in Winchester as an award-winning harpist, who was second highest placed bar harpist in the BBC Young Musician of the Year. The piece, Nocturne by Glinka, is part of Rachel's new CD, which features a new work by Carl Davis entitled Psalm for Harp, which gave the album its title. The CD is being sold in aid of Client Earth, an environmental charity which uses the law to protect life on Earth. Sarah Walker described the CD as really lovely. It was recorded locally at St Nicholas Church in Bishop Sutton, which has a beautiful acoustic. Rachel lives in Winchester and attended St Swithin's School. She began playing the harp aged 9 and at 11 gained a place in the National Children's Orchestra of Great Britain, where she was awarded a Leverhulme scholarship for the top 4 auditions of any instrument. The scholarship paid for her to have a masterclass from an internationally known harpist, Susan Drake, who is now her teacher. At 14, Rachel successfully auditioned for the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain and enjoyed 2 years playing with them under the baton of conductors like Vasily Petrenko and Christian Järvi. With these orchestras, Rachel performed at a range of concert venues from the Royal Albert Hall to Symphony Hall in Birmingham, as well as on Classic FM, Radio 3 and BBTV for the Proms. At Oxford University, Rachel enthusiastically participated in the musical life of the university. She was selected to be principal harpist in a range of ensembles, including the Oxford University Orchestra, frequently accompanying college choirs, and formed her own septet. Rachel has also had a varied solo career, playing at private events and public concerts at venues such as Osborne House and the Royal Society of Arts. In 2011, she was the second highest placed harpist in the BBC Young Musician of the Year.
Thank you, Roz. This is the second piece about a local artist's talent. This is about Hannah Williams. You may have heard of her before, who is on The Voice. The heading is Success for the Voice Star. It's not a surprise, but Hannah Williams has made it to the finals. Winchester's spectacular singer will perform in the ultimate round of The Voice UK. Her performance of Gravity, originally by John Mayer, won over Sir Tom Jones. Speaking after the song, the 38-year-old said, "It felt so good, and I felt really emotional at the end of it. I just hope I've done enough." And she had done more than enough, because the Welsh legend selected her to represent his team in the finals, meaning Leah Cobb and Jake O'Neill have to be sent home. One of these two could stay in the competition, subject to a public vote. I just didn't expect that. Thank you so much. I'm stumped. Stumped, said Hannah after the decision. During the weeks before her performance, Hannah was coached by Spice Girl Melanie C, also known as Sporty Spice. Benjamin Warner will also represent Sir Tom's team in the final, which is expected to air next Saturday. That's March the 20th. If Hannah takes the top spot, she will win a recording contract with Universal's label UMOD. Hannah studied music theatre at the City University between 2003 and 2006.
This next one I have is headed Director's Fraud to Fund His Gambling. A director defrauded the construction company he worked for of thousands of pounds to fund his gambling addiction. Mark John Parsons, 40, abused his position as operations director of GR Westbill Limited over a 10-month period. Parsons of Garfield Close, Bishop's Waltham, instructed customers to pay him directly in cash or arrange for invoices to be paid into his personal bank account. Bournemouth Crown Court heard this money, in the region of £40,000, was used by Parsons in a failed attempt to win back money he had lost gambling. The defendant was jailed for 2 years and 2 months after admitting charges of fraud by false representation and fraud by abuse of position. Sentencing. Judge John Pawson said Parsons' actions were appalling and had a really significant impact on GR Westbill Limited. The judge said the company was wholly blameless and simply a victim in this case. Prosecuting. Althea Brooks said a customer contacted the construction company in June 2019 with concerns that she had paid the defendant directly for work that had been carried out. The court heard the business had not received these funds and a deleted email thread involving Parsons was discovered, which included fake invoices and requests for cash payment. The defendant was confronted on June 24, 2019, and he presented a signed faster payment request, but this was proved to have been fraudulent. He did not turn up for work the following day, sending an email entitled, "Sorry." Mrs. Brooks said he resigned, and he explained he used the money for gambling debts. The total sum obtained by Parsons, which has not been paid back, came from customers in Corfmullen, Ferndown and Poole. A business impact statement from GR Westbuild said, as a result of the crime, staff had been laid off, others had their hours reduced, and there were issues paying suppliers, and the managing director had to put in £40,000 of his own money to support the company.
Senior Lib Dem defends charge for waste service. Winchester Liberal Democrats have defended their controversial new charges for collecting garden waste. Many people have criticised the new brown bins as a stealth tax, but Lib Dems point out that they are second last council in Hampshire to introduce the charge, and most of the other councils are run by the Conservatives. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Service Quality and Transformation, told Full Council, "The City Council now operates a charge for garden waste collection service in common with all bar one of the other authorities within Hampshire. The exception is Fareham, and they are due to begin a chargeable service in February 2022. Winchester has set the second lowest service price of all Hampshire councils, while also offering a larger bin to those who need it, and with no charge for the bin in the first place. We also provide a service nearly all the year round, but this is not the case in all other places where some services cease over winter.
I've got another positive story here. Farmers Market hailed. It is official. This county is home to the best farmers market in the UK. Hampshire's Farmers Market took the top spot at a national award ceremony. The organisation, which sets up in Winchester once a month, was announced as the winner by Farm Retail Association. Following the virtual ceremony, Chairman David Woodroof said, "We are all absolutely over the moon. This award is shared among every producer, market manager, our loyal customers, and everyone behind the scenes that make the markets happen all year round. 2020 was a difficult year for all of us, so to receive this accolade makes it all worthwhile." Hampshire was one of the four finalists up against Barnard Castle in County Durham, Great Malvern in Worcestershire, and Moseley in the West Midlands. The judges said, "Hampshire Farmers Markets really does tick all the boxes. With strong management, the market offers a good range of stalls and products amid a good setup. To keep everyone safe, customers were managed both when near stalls or on paths around stalls. Each stall is also well positioned and safe."
Wickham Horse Fair cancelled for the second year running. Wickham Horse Fair has been cancelled for the second year running due to COVID-19 restrictions. A post on Twitter from Hampshire Police's Country Watch team on Saturday confirmed that the event had been cancelled. The tweet reads, "This year's Wickham Horse Fair has been cancelled due to COVID-19 restrictions. In order to help keep each other safe and prevent the spread of coronavirus, the decision has been taken to cancel the fair. The authorities expect the event to take place as normal in 2022. The cancellation follows consultation between representatives of the event and local authorities, including Hampshire Constabulary, Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council. The one-day event is a massive part of the gypsy and traveller community's calendar, attracting people from across the UK. It is a place to buy and sell horses as well as a huge social gathering."
Fitness for mental health. This Winchester primary school took on a mental health and fitness challenge, completed 28 miles in 28 days. Pupils at week were aiming to raise awareness of mental health, commit to exercising, and donated anything they could to one of the school's chosen mental health charities. Oliver Cooling, Year 4, put together a montage video and contacted a special guest to introduce and summarise everybody's efforts to the video. This was none other than Joe Wicks. "I wanted to make the video so that we could all see each other during lockdown," said Oliver. "I really enjoy making and editing videos, and I learned many new skills making the film." My mum emailed Joe Wicks to see if he would do a video for us, but we didn't expect to hear back from him. I was so excited when he replied to us. Each day, staff recorded videos, published them to their YouTube, motivating the children to walk, run, scoot, dance, and other activities. Assistant head teacher Catherine Knapp and Year 5 class teacher Mike Weatherall orchestrated the challenge named #5FitFeb. That's not easy to say. I'm going to repeat it. #5FitFeb. Ms Knapp said, "Our children know that keeping active is a brilliant way to support well-being and to feel good about themselves. We came up with," here it comes again, hashtag 5, FitFeb, "to help our children and community contact with each other, connect with each other, have fun and get out in the fresh air to keep active and feel good."
A rat run essential for shops. A senior Lib Dem has justified the closing of a popular Winchester rat run. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member with responsibility for traffic, believes pedestrianising the square is essential to help local businesses recover. This comes after a resident slammed the decision, which has seen access from St Swithin Street and Simmons Street cut off. Stephen Perryman said the alternative route through the one-way system is a waste of time and fuel. "Supposedly closed at weekends as a COVID measure, I drove into town to visit my High Street bank via Southgate Street and via St Thomas's Street as usual to find it blocked," he told the Chronicle. "After driving all round the one-way system, I eventually arrived at the square. I arrived to find 5 council workers and 1 manager putting up new signs and barriers so that residents cannot access the square now without driving all the way round the one-way system. A complete waste of time and fuel, and another way Lib Dums to stop people coming into the town to support our struggling shops. So madcap schemes like this is where our 3% council tax increase is going. The Lib Dums won't be happy until they've killed off all trade in the High Street completely." Councillor Martin Todd said that one of the biggest reasons for the closure is to support local companies. "Local businesses are telling us that full pedestrianisation of the top of the square at the weekend, as well as safely putting out pavement seating during the week, is essential to enable them to recover from the extreme challenges that they have faced and continue to face from COVID. It was only possible to do that with the new scheme that cut through traffic, which was developed by the City Council with County Council support in close consultation with residents and businesses. I'm sorry the resident missed the signs making it clear that it was not possible to access the square from St Swithin Street and Simmons Street. These are now being made even clearer. And while the council continues to encourage people to park further out, walk for a few extra minutes and save money, if they wish to park in the square, they are still able to do so."
Station. A senior city councillor has rubbished Extinction Rebellion's claims over the latest Silver Hill plans. In a statement, the climate group said the council has decided to have an on-street bus stop rather than a bus interchange. A new bus station had been one of the popular demands from the public over the revamp of the city centre. But at a cabinet meeting last Wednesday, Councillor Martin Todd said this will be a temporary thing whilst the area is being redeveloped. Clarifying the situation, he told the Chronicle, "Extinction Rebellion has got this one wrong. This is an interim solution to allow redevelopment of central Winchester to start. We've not said anywhere that we're scrapping plans for a bus hub. Whatever happens, we're not just going to have a bus hub and nothing else. We don't have that now. Why should we want it in the future? Their suggestion is that we should scrap the most popular bus stops in the city is bonkers." As one of the bus operators said in their response to the original SPD for Central Winchester, "Buses cannot simply have one point of boarding and alighting in the city centre." The Extinction Rebellion Winchester statement says that an on-street bus stop provision is a very ill-considered plan. It added that it would mean long and confusing walks between shops when interchanging, affecting the elderly and less mobile, no safe weatherproof environment to wait for buses, streets such as Tanner, Middlebrook and Silver Hill will still not be traffic-free, So our quality, particularly particulate matter, and safety will be compromised. The ability to transition to electric buses will be more costly and complex.
The latest on runway plans. A meeting to discuss plans to extend an airport runway is set to take place this month. On March the 25th, Eastleigh Local Area Committee will be considering a planning application to extend the runway at Southampton Airport to accommodate four bigger planes. The plans are said to be important for the survival of the airport, splitting opinion as some have objected, claiming that the extension would have an impact on noise and pollution. Supporters say the plans would be good for not only the airport, but the other areas of the economy, with more people heading to the airport in Eastleigh rather than travelling to airports like Heathrow and Gatwick. The meeting will consider the plans, is starting at 10 a.m. and will be held online on Microsoft Teams. Scheduled breaks will have been built into the agenda, and the council has now put guidance out on its website for those who want to take part. If people want to address the committee, they have been asked to contact Democratic Services, and their email address is democratic.services@eastleigh.gov.uk. Or there are a couple of telephone numbers here. 07 823 626 625. That is 07 823 626 625. A spokesperson for the council said the team will be happy to guide through this new process and the available partition options. Those taking part will need to use a desktop device, as a mobile device will not work, and they will need a reliable internet connection. Participants can either speak, provide an audio or visual statement, or provide a written statement that will be read out on their behalf. Equal time has been allowed for those wanting to speak for or against the plans, and each person will have 3 minutes to share their thoughts with the committee. All participants will have up to 3 minutes each, with equal time allowed for those wishing to speak for or against. The deadline for registering and submitting statements for the meeting is March the 19th. Those who want to have their say should provide Democratic Services with all necessary materials.
Next item I'm going to read is about wooden seats being returned to the inner close. Seating that was removed from the inner close over concerns about social distancing issues and the spread of COVID-19 has been returned. Around a dozen of the long wooden seats were removed earlier this year because the Dean and Chapter were growing concerned about the number of people gathering at the benches. A spokeswoman told the Chronicle the seats were being used at illegal meeting points for groups of people, with some indulging in antisocial behaviour. Several letters were written at this newspaper pointing out that the seats were an important resting place for older people.
Lockdown sparks faster driving. Motorists increased their speeds on Hampshire's main routes last year as coronavirus lockdown restrictions sparked a drop in traffic levels, figures reveal. The RAC says that some drivers across the country took advantage of the emptier roads to drive at dangerous speeds, including in residential areas. Department for Transport data shows cars and light vans travelling at an average speed of 34.7 miles an hour on A roads in Hampshire last year. That was up from 32.3 miles per hour in 2019, a rise of 7%. The A259 saw the biggest rise in speeds, up 33% to 25.9 miles per hour, followed by the A313, up 18% to 24.2 miles an hour. Across England, the average speed of cars and light vans on A roads rose by 8% last year to 27.3 miles per hour. This caused by a steady increase in speeds following the imposition of COVID-19 stay-at-home restrictions in March last year, the DfT said. Densely populated areas saw the biggest rise in average speeds. Simon Williams, RAC Road Safety Spokesman, said the impact of the pandemic on the country's roads was something of a double-edged sword. He added, on the one hand, fewer delays is positive and may well have led to an improvement in overall air quality. But on the flip side, we know that some drivers have taken advantage of quieter roads by driving at dangerous speeds. This has been a particular problem in 30-mile-an-hour roads in the residential areas. Mr. Williams said it was important police forces continue to crack down on excessive speeders and that there are consequences for their totally unacceptable actions. The figures only cover A roads, which account for around 10% of England's highway network, but carry around a third of all traffic. Speeds were measured using samples of vehicles recorded at different times of the day. The data also reveals the impact of quieter roads on delays along the country's A roads last year. The DfT said the average speed of motorists across the main road network, including motorways, stood at 61.8 miles per hour last year. The department also said average speeds and delays are returning to pre-pandemic levels as COVID restrictions are eased.
This next item I have is called Moving Tributes to Those Who Go Beyond the Call of Duty as First Nominations Made for Hero Awards. Heartwarming stories of sacrifice and support have been flooding into the Chronicle following the launch of the Hampshire Hero Awards. A head teacher who has worked hard to ensure her pupils have not missed out, a woman who set up a Facebook group to help those with mental issues, and a Romsey woman who has set up an emergency baby supply service are among the host of nominations that have been made. The awards, with its principal sponsor Utilita, are aimed at those people and organisations in the county who deserve our thanks and recognition for all they have done during the COVID-19 pandemic. They are run in conjunction with our sister NewsQuest titles in the region and are divided into three categories: medical heroes, emergency heroes, and everyday heroes. Bill Brown, on behalf of the organisers, said, "We are delighted with the variety of nominations we have been receiving. Just as we hoped, there are really some great stories about those who have gone the extra mile. People who have worked selflessly for the benefit of others. Among those nominated is Sarah Mathlin from the Winklebury Federation of Schools, who has been nominated because of the work she has done in looking after her pupils and staff. Michelle Solly Andrews, who nominated Sarah, said she even went to the address of all 300 plus children personally to deliver a little treat and to make sure that they were all doing okay. Then there is Danielle Lewis-Watt from Andover, who set up a Facebook group to help people suffering anxiety and depression. She was nominated by Mark Dargan, who said she really has got a heart of gold and does it for absolutely no adulation. She so deserves this. Mother of two, Hayley Jarvis, has come to the rescue of families in need of baby necessities during the COVID pandemic. Hayley, from North Baddesley, has a full-time job working in COVID clinical trials, but she has found the time to set up an emergency delivery service to mums and dads who just don't have the funds to look after the younger children because of the impact of the lockdown. Hayley has been nominated as an unsung hero in the Hampshire Hero Awards 2021 by her friend and project partner, Lauren Denham. Lauren said, "I've helped Hayley to set this up, but it was her idea in the first place. The two women have launched a website called babynecessities.co.uk where they explain the setup in the non-profit organisation aimed at helping alleviate child poverty after watching a documentary on the growing need for baby banks in the UK. Our vision was to support families during hardship, as well as to see baby items our children no longer needed reused to protect the environment and to reduce unnecessary waste. The pair collect quality pre-loved items such as clothes, toys and equipment and distribute them to families in need across Southampton and the surrounding areas." Lauren said, "A lot of the time, it's not the people on benefits who have the greatest need. It's those who suddenly find themselves without an income. They're grateful for the help from both individuals and local businesses." Lauren said there are certain things like nappy and formula that they need brand new. She said Hayley has also a job working with the COVID clinical trials. "She is a real hero in my eyes and deserves recognition."
Then goes quiet amid city work. A major electricity company, which is undertaking a huge project in Winchester, is going quiet, at least for some of its work. Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks has announced that it will replace its fuel-powered saws, hedge cutters and leaf blowers with electrical equipment to work as quietly as possible. This comes after a resident in Southgate Street told the Chronicle that noisy SSEN work was preventing him from sleeping. Anthony Richardson said he was close to losing his job due to the work taking place directly below his bedroom window. Performance and delivery manager Jamie Jones said, "Much of our tree cutting activity takes place in rural areas, which are already quiet by nature. By trialling this carefully selected kit in these areas, we will have a comprehensive overview on how it benefits our customers in terms of noise reduction, and with the removal of fuel-driven equipment, a reduction in potential air pollution. In the event of a power cut, where a tree or branch may have damaged an overhead power line, we can be called out to work during the night, so having significantly quieter kit to carry out these works will result in minimal disruption to those living nearby. There are also safety benefits to our own colleagues through the reduction in noise and vibration of the equipment and the elimination of working closely with fuel-powered tools. The equipment is currently being trialled up and down the country. All tree-cutting team members have been fully trained in the operation and maintenance of the equipment to ensure both their safety and that of their customers. The trial is part of a broader effort by SSEN to decarbonise its equipment and support the net zero transition."
Coronavirus, 1 year on. It has been almost a year since the nation went into lockdown for the first time. The first two cases in the Winchester district were reported on the same day, March the 6th. Figures by Public Health England show that by April 11th, within a month, more than 100 cases had been recorded in the district. Today, the cumulative figure stands at nearly 5,000. The first person who died within 28 days of positive COVID test in the district was pronounced dead on March the 22nd. This total now stands at more than 180. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "I have never been more proud to work for the NHS than I have over the last year. Our staff have gone above and beyond, working long hours in unfamiliar and challenging situations to help care for our community. Each member of our team has played an important part, and I cannot thank them enough for the compassion, resilience, and commitment to care they have all shown. I also want to thank the community for the continued support they have shown their local hospitals over the last year and for continuing to do all they can to keep themselves and others safe. It hasn't been easy to stay in-house, but it's made a big difference in our hospitals. Stephen Bryan, MP, said, I think we'd happily never hear the word COVID again, let alone pandemic. But it is not done yet. It's been an awful year, most of all for those who've lost people, of course. My fear is that there's still much more to come in terms of economic fallout and mental health in particular, as has already passed. We are so far ahead locally in the vaccination programme, which is the only way out of this. Ministers took a big gamble on the vaccination risk form, and it really paid off. For the UK, they deserve great credit for that. One thing that has struck me this past 12 months, but not surprised me, is how Winchester's big society has stepped forward to support each other. It has been a joy to behold. Hampshire as a whole has seen 89,848 cases and 1,884 deaths since the start of the pandemic. The first positive case in Hampshire was recorded on March the 3rd, 2020. In April, a temporary mortuary was set up at Southampton Airport. It was erected on one side of the airport known as the Grayson site, and it is completely separated from the passenger terminal and airport operations. At the end of September, Southampton Airport was turned into a mass testing site, replacing the Tipper car park site in Portsmouth. Finally, on December the 8th, Second World War veteran Michael Tibbs was the first patient to use the Hampshire's vaccine hub at Portsmouth Queen Alexander Hospital. He was one of a number of people, aged 80 and over, who were first to receive the jab. Michael at Lynchmere said, I didn't know what to expect, but it's absolutely wonderful and I feel really fortunate to have had the vaccination. The NHS began vaccinating people on December the 7th, making the start of the biggest immunisation programme in history.
A rather more positive view of COVID. And we finish our news items today with another quite sort of positive story. It's headed Banksy Mural. A new Banksy-style mural has appeared on a bridge in Winchester. The artwork has been painted on a wall near the Handlebar Cafe off Garnier Road. It's got people talking if the piece is a Banksy original. It shows a figure of a child holding the line of a kite, which leads up to a real rainbow kite caught in nearby branches. The figure and style are very similar to artwork found across the UK, including two pieces of art in Southampton, on Shirley Road, Mount Pleasant Road, and work in Beavers Valley. Despite the similarities, the artwork was not by the infamous Banksy, but a rather local artist who goes by the name Hendog. On their Instagram page, at Hendog Art, they said, to all the mums, I left a little surprise at the Handlebar Cafe for you. Happy Mother's Day, you really deserve it. On March the 1st last year, a mural was painted on a wall in Mount Pleasant Road in Southampton. It shows the figure of a child holding a balloon with the words, Our Future, sprayed across the top. So, as I say, that concludes our news items for this week. Just before we go, another reminder that Liz LeGrace is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now, would you please put that memory stick, once you finish with it, in the wallet, along with the insert address, and when you have finished with it, and return it to us as soon as possible. Thanks to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz Legg, and of course to our readers, who this week are my wife Roz.
It's just me.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. And from me, Peter. Until the next time, goodbye.